Thanks so much, Al, for that wonderful, wonderful interpretation of So Far Away by Carole King. A number of years ago, this was my, I don't know if it was my mother's favorite song, but it was a song that she said, it just really connects with me because I have one daughter in Ireland, Northern Ireland. I have a son in Micronesia. I've got another kid over here, and she said, so far away, doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore? It was a song that really resonated with our family at that time, and I think ever since, because I don't know if it's true for you, but it's surely true in my life that sometimes we get far away and long ways sometimes from our family and our friends. Don't we stay in one place anymore? A week ago Thursday, my wife Nicole and I drove to the Albany Airport to catch a plane to Knoxville, Tennessee. We were heading in that direction because this was to be the 30th anniversary of the Cummins family reunion, which was going to be held in the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina, and Knoxville was the closest. And so we got a car and we traveled along the highway, which was called the Dragon Tail. I don't know if any of you have been down there, but this is the windiest road. And I had to stop a couple times just to make it to the reunion. I was going to join 60 other members of this clan, this Cummins clan, named after my grandfather, Andrew Cummins, whose Scottish-Irish family came to the United States in about 1770 as part of one of the exoduses, particularly of the Scott-Irish, to this country. At this reunion, there were people from California and Wisconsin and Connecticut and Massachusetts and New York and Pennsylvania and Florida and Tennessee. Nobody was from North Carolina. There wasn't anybody there from North Carolina. But this was the meeting place, basically, for the last 30 years because it was the most centrally located. Think about that image, the reunion. A couple of weeks before the reunion, I found myself, a part of me, not wanting to go. I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure we all have had opportunities to go to reunions where you've kind of said, I'm not sure I really want to go. And there's lots of reasons why we don't want to go, right? In this particular case, it took me a while to figure out why I was resistant to go to a reunion. This was every 3 years we do this. So this would have been the 11th reunion, and I'd never missed one. I'd never missed a reunion since my mother started this reunion 30 years ago in 1984. And then I began to realize why I didn't want to go. This was going to be the first reunion without anyone from my mother and father's generation there. In other words, no older generation. It's here. And I go, oh my gosh. And I did not want to feel the sadness. I did not want to feel the loss of my mother and father, but also the wonderful aunts and uncles that enriched my life. That's why I didn't want to go. It wasn't because I didn't want to see my 15 other cousins and their children and their children's children, three generations there. It was because I did not want to come face to face with the loss, with the sadness of losing that generation. But I went anyway, because I've come to learn that if you don't move into it, you lose it. If you don't go into the grief, you don't have the chance to experience the love. I used to think that love and hate were the opposites. You know, that's what I was taught when I was a kid. You know, the opposite of love is hate. But as I've grown older, I've come to realize that the real partner of love is grief. It's not hate. Hate's another emotion for me. It's grief. They seem to go together. Love and grief come together. And here I was going to this reunion, once again learning for the, I don't know how many times, that these two are partners in life, and as you grow older, they become even more intertwined because you have more experiences of loss, the sadness of it all. I remember when I was in my 20s and I was studying for the Unitarian Universalist ministry, and I was maybe 27, 28, a little bit even before that in my mid-20s. 40 years ago now. And there was a song in our hymn book, and I just didn't get it. I had no idea why would this song be in our hymn book. And it was the song Every Night and Every Morn, which is by William Blake, and it's with music by Ralph Vaughan Williams, which was in a I think it's in a minor key, right? Those of you, I'm not a musician, but I think it's in a minor key. And I said, why would we want to sing Every Night and Every Morn as part of a service? It just brought me way down. You know, every night and every morn, some to misery are born. That's where it starts. Every morn and every night, some are born to sweet delight. Joy and woe are woven fine clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine. It is right. It should be so. We were made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, safely through the world we go. Well, in my 20s, I had no idea what this was about. I just didn't know. And then in a minor key, why are we going to do this? Now I sing it, and I get it. I get it now. Maybe you got to have a lot more years to understand what this William Blake poem is really all about. We were made for joy and woe, and when this we rightly know, safely through the world we go. Pretty powerful. That may be the heart of my religion or my understandings of what it means to be alive as a human being. All of us here have woe, pain, hurt, suffering, sadness. We all have it. But we all have joy as well. And when we know that these are partners in life, and one is connected to the other, it is often what we love and lose that causes the pain. But if we're going to love, we got to hold these two together. So here I was at this reunion. I got there, and I was still feeling like I didn't want to go, particularly as I was going up that winding road on the way to this Fontana Village in North Carolina. I don't know if any of you have ever been there, but it's housing that was there for the TVA when they were building the Fontana Dam back in the 30s, and it's the housing that's left over, that's been upgraded. I got there, and all I had to do was see a few of my cousins, the ones I really liked in particular. There's some that, you know, you struggle with in any family, maybe a person or two. And then I saw the children of all my cousins, and then I saw their children, and I began to realize, isn't this beautiful? Here we are all together as a family. And it didn't take long for the sadness to turn to joy, but I had to go through it. And then I began to ask myself, because when I was asked to do a service this summer, I realized that I was going to come and do this right after the reunion. And so I began to think about the word reunion. What is reunion? Take that word a little bit further down. What is reunion? Somehow it assumes that something has been apart and it's coming back together. It's been apart and it's been coming back together. And I began to think about reunions, and I began to think about whether it be class reunions or other reunions with friends, and sometimes it was always complicated. There's never been a reunion that I've been to in the last 20 or 30 years that has not been complicated for me emotionally. And then I thought back to a phrase that came when I was in theological school from the theologian Paul Tillich. And he basically said that God is that which reunites the separated. God is that which reunites the separated. I thought, well, okay. I had to do a little bit of interpretation on that one, because I didn't quite understand it at the beginning, but then I began to draw upon our universalist heritage, where we affirm historically and in the present that when understanding God, we understand that God is love. And so if I change the word, then I can really get into it much easier. Love is that which reunites the separated. Love is that which reunites the separated. In other words, our universalists tell us that there is, in this universe, a presence, not perfect, but there, which urges and encourages all of us to reunite that which is separated. Reunite that which is separated inside of us, right here. That which reunites the separation between us. That which reunites the separation with the earth, the universe. That there is this urging or this encouragement as human beings, and I would even say with the rest of creation, to reunite that which is separated. So my reunion was about love. It was about the reunion of that which was separated, which was my family on my mother's side. It also connected me with the affirmation of our seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism, is that everything is interconnected, that we are part of a web. And one can think of that ecologically. I think of that principle as just another statement of what love is all about. Love is that which connects us to each other and to the universe. Everything is interdependent. We are part of a web of life. That's the way it is. And while each of us are separate and individual, ultimately everything is connected. And I remember a short little phrase by E.M. Forster which said, connect, just connect. That's all there was for the phrase. I kept on looking at it, connect, just connect. That is at the heart of life. But yet then, why is it, as human beings then, we resist the reunion of the separated in ourselves, in our families, in our neighborhoods? Why is it that we sometimes just want to keep ourselves isolated or alone from ourselves and from others and from nature. Well, I think that both Christianity and Buddhism give us some hints here, and I want to just take you on a road, at least in terms of my understanding, as to why it is that we as human beings, including myself, have often such a difficult time reuniting with that which is separated. My understanding of the concept of sin within the Christian tradition is sin is that which separates us from God. Or, in the universalist language, sin is that which separates us from love. So that our resistance, for whatever reason, which often comes because we've been hurt, we've been rejected, we're in pain, we're suffering in some form or another, and we want to hold on to that suffering, we hold on to that suffering rather than healing it and moving on. Sometimes it's easier for us to hold on to pain than it is to move through it. Now, the Buddhists say that it's attachment. In other words, you got the pain and you attach yourself to the pain. You hold on to that which is meant to be let go of as a process of healing and wholeness. You hold on to it, and therefore you cannot experience the reunion of the separated. You've got an investment in the pain rather than in the love that is possible. I don't know about you, but my big issue in life has been abandonment. From a very early age, the feeling is if I wasn't loved when I was a little guy. And I've been working my whole life trying to find a way to deal with that pain. We all have different things in our lives, but that's been my most challenging issue. And sometimes when I was a little guy, you know what I used to do? I used to go find my friends' mothers and try to get them to love me. I was going to find love. I didn't know where I could find it. Now, that pattern can work when you're a little guy, but as you get older, that's not a good pattern. Because that becomes the heart of codependency. You're out there trying to find love. Many ministers, including me, one of the reasons that we become ministers is we want to be loved. So let's be honest. Many people in the helping professions go into the helping professions because they want to be loved. And they didn't get enough love in their life in other ways. Well, I can admit that this has been a struggle of my life. But getting love that's conditional is not love. The way you get love is by going deep into life and allowing that which separates to be able to come in so that there's an openness in it, and it's not dependent on another loving you, but on a process and a way of being in the world that is alive and mutual and has an interaction to it. It's not grounded on codependency. One of the great surprises of my life as it relates to the reunion of the separated was moving to Columbia County 13 years ago. I was an urban boy. I just identified with cities. That's where life was, is in the city. I come out here in the country. I don't see another house. I'm out here in the middle of this woods and these fields, and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. And for a year, I said, is this ever going to be released so that I can be in nature? Finally, it did get released, and I began to realize that I had been cut off and separated from nature without even knowing it, and it frightened me to be in the midst of the animals and the plants and nature itself. Move into that which you're frightened of. Move into life. So when you think about your life, individually, family-wise, friendship-wise, communal-wise, nature-wise, where are you separated? Who are you separated from? What are you separated from? What is it that just terrifies you when you think about it? You don't want to go there. But you know that if you don't go there, you won't be able to heal and be whole. What is it in your life that you need to be reunited to? Different for all of us. Yeah, we need to be alone, but I'm a believer that in the end, we all have that great universalist urge to be reunited with the separated. Love is present. And V, who I'm so grateful shares this worship service, we share it together, she found the picture on the front of your order of service. If you could just look at it for a second. I don't know about you, but I had a visceral, emotional reaction to that when I saw it. Not everyone will, because it's art. But for me, I said, that's it. That's the reunion of the separated, right there. In this kind of abstract, I think they're hands, I don't know, but all I do is I feel it. So take this with you. Take this, not this, that's not what that's about. Take this with you. Take this with you and see how it comes alive inside of you. The reunion of the separated. May we all experience it.